Boy, I like coffee.
Me too.
Coffee is good.
I especially like it in my Kate Beaton David Bowie mug.
That's right.
I got it in Toronto.
I didn't even realize I grabbed that for you.
It is the best mug. It says glam breakfast.
Glam what?
Glam breakfast.
How do you glam a breakfast?
And it's got David Bowie in his Aladdin Sane outfit drinking a cup of coffee.
That seems appropriate somehow.
Yeah.
As opposed to copious amounts of cocaine.
There's probably cocaine in the coffee, a little sprinkle.
That's not how that works.
You know? Yeah, it is. No.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I am your host, Jared Jones. And across the table from me, as always, is the Miles Morales to my Ben Riley, MJ Kramer. Hello, MJ.
Hi.
Those are Spider-Men.
Yes.
Both of them.
You know, you could have said Spider-Gwen.
But Spider-Gwen is like her own awesome thing. I was talking about a functioning Spider-Man that works compared to one that clearly never did. And I would be the lesser of the two in your presence.
Spider-Gwen works. Spider-Gwen works great.
Why would I bring up Spider-Man, MJ?
Because we're going to talk about the new trailer.
The new trailer, that's right. The new Into the Spider-Verse trailer that dropped literally moments before we started recording. We both got a chance to check it out, so let's have a little chat about it real quick.
Yeah, it's an animated Marvel movie.
That's right, from Sony.
Which is pretty fun.
That's true. Sony's got two Spider-Man type movies coming out this year, so I guess they've been keeping their end of the bargain with Marvel, I suppose. This and Venom. This looks decidedly a hell of a lot better than Venom.
Heck yeah, it does. Yeah.
All right. So as a person that's not completely sold on the whole concept of the Spider-Verse, trying to extend the lore of like one of Marvel's, if not the most iconic characters, this looks pretty fun.
In your universe, there's only one Spider-Man. But there is another universe. It looks and sounds like yours, but it's not.
Speaking of Gwen Stacy, Into the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it looks amazing.
That's where she first appeared in the comical books.
Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, which was like sort of the intro series to the crossover series Spider-Verse. And she was a breakout hit from that. I think it's pretty exciting that she makes a little appearance at the end.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah.
Spoilers for the trailer if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I think it's weird that she calls herself Spider-Gwen and doesn't say Spider-Woman, but that's cool.
She calls herself Gwen Stacy.
Oh, she does.
Yeah.
She does.
No, I thought that was weird. It's like, I'm Gwen Stacy. It's like, okay, cool. We're just giving each other secret identities. I thought we were meeting each other for the first time. There's a lot of established trust.
Well, that just reminds me of that line from Infinity War. Oh, we're using our made-up names now.
Yeah.
Time to swing, just like I taught you.
When did you teach me that?
I didn't. It's a little joke for team building.
Hey, guys.
Okay, who are you?
I'm Gwen Stacy.
Come on.
How many more spider people are there?
Save it for Comic-Con.
What's Comic-Con?
Let's go!
It looks exciting. It looks well animated.
I'm sure Spider-Ham will make an appearance.
The voice cast looks great. I didn't realize Mahershala Ali was going to be in this.
Yeah, he's playing the Prowler.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
They got Hailee Steinfeld, who's going to be in that Bumblebee movie, to be Gwen Stacy, which I think is a missed opportunity. Emma Stone clearly could have shoved some things aside in her schedule.
I think it's fine to make her younger. Was Hailee Steinfeld's a little younger, right?
Yeah, but Emma Stone is an awesome Gwen Stacy who just happened to be in two really bad Spider-Man movies.
She was great. Yeah. But, you know, she's probably busy.
Yeah.
Oscar award winner and all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
But I don't remember Miles' dad being a cop. That wasn't a thing in the comics, was it? I don't think it was.
I don't know.
But it's
been a long time since I've read that the Bendis Pichelli.
Yeah, I
Ultimate.
Don't think it was, but I might be wrong because again, it has been a long time for me too.
I feel like he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, like something in my brain is like, yeah, of course he was, you idiot. But
well, they definitely emphasize it in this trailer, and it's super cute.
It's the
funny.
Best parts of the trailer.
Super funny.
That actually makes me worried for the Peter Parker character in this movie because he seems like he's going to be the least interesting part of the movie.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine
that's
with that. Fine.
But they look like they're making him a little down on his luck. Like he looks a little downtrodden, Peter Parker does. I don't know a ton of these voice actors. Like someone named Jake Johnson is voicing
He was
Peter.
In a show called The New Girl.
Okay.
With Zooey Deschanel. That's pretty much the only thing I know him from. Yeah, who the hell's Jake Johnson?
Yeah, and I guess Liev Schreiber is going to be voicing the Kingpin.
Okay, Liev Schreiber has an awesome voice.
Yeah.
I don't know. This may sound mean. I don't know if he's going to sound big enough.
I think he'll do it. I think he can do it.
I don't know. All right.
Yeah. That I think is good casting.
Mm-hmm. I'm worried about too many characters crammed into this damn thing. Like, they're going to just be doing references and, you know, Easter eggs and such like that, as opposed to telling, like, a, you know, consistent story throughout. Sony is not exactly on the top of their game as far as Spider-Man movies are concerned.
Well, I'm hopeful for this. Mm-hmm. Like, this trailer had me giggling, and I really enjoyed it.
Had a good giggle. How do you like the animation? It's a little herky-jerky, a little stop-motion-y.
Oh, no, it looked great.
Yeah,
looked great.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got good style to it. Villains, I spotted the Prowler, we said. Kingpin, we've already talked about. But I think I saw the ultimate version of the Green Goblin.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Okay. It's either him or the lizard. I mean, I haven't done like a screen grab or anything like that, but that's what it looked like to me. Yeah, this looks pretty cute.
They said how it's going to be released? It's not coming into theaters, is it? Or is it just
It's coming into theaters this Christmas.
No kidding.
Yeah, this is the Sony's big Christmas release. Like, this is it.
I assumed it was just going to be like what DC does with all its animated stuff and just straight to video.
No.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Sony just recently announced that they're not going to be making the Silver Sable Black Cat movie right away.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what they're calling it. Something dreadful, I'm sure. Because those are characters that have not been established anywhere else. We're just introducing two B-list characters apropos of nothing with no Spider-Man in it. That's a gamble.
That's what they're doing with Venom, too.
Yes, that's what we call a gamble. Venom is also a terrible idea. And holy crap, there's this movie coming out called Upgrade.
Upgrade.
With the guy that's not Tom Hardy, but looks conspicuously a lot like Tom Hardy. I thought he was Tom Hardy in Prometheus. His name's, I don't know, some three name. That and Venom have a lot of similarities to him in the trailers. Somebody did like a side-by-side thing, and it's like Tom Hardy going, oh my God, what's going on with this thing coming out of my body and hurting people? And it's like Upgrade's like pretty much the same thing. He's like, he's not in control of his body. Like, there's bionic implants and they're just clearing a room. His face is like, this is wild. I don't know what I'm doing. So I don't know. It looks like they made a better Venom movie already. So we could just skip Venom.
All right.
So yeah, no, the Sony Spider-Man standalone movies don't look like they're going to be able to stand on their own two legs. This one does. This one looks like it has...
Because it actually is a Spider-Man movie.
Well, yeah, but not only that, but like, it's introducing all these interesting characters and you have a lot more leeway with animation. So that means that they could, like, you know, spin out into a franchise unto itself. Yeah. That looks like something. Looks like a lot of potential there.
Fingers crossed for more Gwen.
Yeah, you'll get your Gwen.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I know, Dad.
You gotta say I love you back.
Dad, are you serious?
I wanna hear it.
You wanna hear me say it?
I love you, Dad.
You're dropping me off out of school.
I love you, Dad.
Look at this place.
Dad, I love you.
Dad, I love you.
That's a copy.
So yes, this week, we were really busy reading so many damn comics that we didn't really come up with a substantive theme for this week's episode.
Topic.
We decided we'd just talk about the comics coming out this week. It's like top five extended into the whole episode.
But also, like, there are a lot of number ones out this week.
Oh, so many.
Just Marvel has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five, I think. Five new number ones.
And they're big number ones, too.
Yeah. And they're DC has a couple as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, spots to jump in on new books.
Yeah.
If you're so inclined.
Sure.
And we thought it might be fun to talk about all those.
Yeah. We've read them. We might have some spoilers for these issues, so be aware of that. Beyond that, I think that it's a really intense week for comics, but I think that just kind of happens in the summertime.
Yeah.
Lots of big events, lots of, you know, big new debuts, they all tend to drop. But now the market's so damn saturated and publishers are vying for that top spot in the market share, more books are out than ever before, and there's going to be some overlap.
Yeah.
This is definitely one of those weeks.
I think the 4th of July is going to be another big one because it's going to be Batman's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Captain America number one, which was a very timely spot for it. I applaud Marvel for putting out that day.
I would have called them out on it if they hadn't, because this is one of those years where July 4th lands on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, you know, pay attention. Pay attention to the calendar, kids.
But I guess we should just jump in on here.
I guess we should. Although, like I said, there will be spoilers. We're just going to give our overall impressions of these books. You be the judge based on our recs. Hopefully we save you some cash and or encourage you to invest in a book you otherwise might have skipped. MJ, how about you kick us off?
All right. Well, I guess the first one I can mention is Doctor Strange number one.
Yeah, I got it right over here.
I don't know if its cover stock says anything. This seems to be Marvel's biggest release of the week because they actually gave it some nice, shiny, like thicker cover stock.
When I had it in the stack, it felt like a DC comic.
Yeah, I wish they would have done this for Amazing Spider-Man 800 last week, because then because it's thicker than normal. Man, so many copies were really fucked up by shipping. And if they would have given it a nicer, thicker cover, they wouldn't have all gotten as fucked up. Man, Marvel, it was a $10 book. Couldn't you do that? Do that nice cover stock once.
But then Marvel would have to spend some money on its actual production costs. And you know how much they hate to do that.
Yeah. Oh, gods. A couple cents on some cover stock.
Perish forbid. So let's talk about the issue itself. You got to read it.
I did.
I did too.
It is written by Mark Waid, art by Jesus Saiz, letters by Corey Pettit. Looks like Jesus Saiz did his own colors too. It's really pretty.
It's a little muted for what Doctor Strange kind of was for the last couple of years.
Yeah, but it's very much an intro issue. I don't know that enough really happens to really grab you yet.
Nope.
I mean, it wasn't bad.
It's shockingly boring.
I didn't find it to be boring per se. I just did think it went a little slow. There's a lot of narration. I liked, like, the narration feels like it fits in a Doctor Strange book. It's very, like, elevated language.
He refers to Tony Stark as the Iron Man.
Yes.
On more than one occasion.
But it's a lot more narration than dialogue. It works. I am intrigued to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Even if this wasn't like a slam bang of a first issue, it's still fun.
It starts off really strong. There's like this really kind of cool par for course Doctor Strange action sequence where he uses his magic against some substantial foe, and it's got really cool visuals, and it's like, oh, here we go. We're hitting the ground running. I wouldn't expect any less from Mark Waid. But then it twists. There's a plot twist very early on, which kind of sets the book on a trajectory towards something unexpected. This is what I was thinking about when I was reading it. Like, oftentimes when a new creative team hops on a book, they have to reestablish what it all means to be this character. And it gets kind of repetitive a lot of the time.
Well, there is an aspect of this sort of new direction they're taking it that is a little reminiscent of what they did in the Aaron Bacalo.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Run in, like, the first issue very early on.
It's like, what does magic mean to Stephen Strange? How much has he come to truly rely on it? That kind of stuff.
But, I mean, it's cool. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it either. It's a Mark Waid book. Jesus says he doesn't half-ass stuff.
Yeah.
Everything inside of it looks absolutely beautiful, but I wanted it to be done. By the time I got to, like, the last five pages, I was like, oh, I get it. Trim it. I feel like editors don't edit. I really do. Especially when it comes to top-tier writers. And we'll talk a little more about that further into the episode, but
I think editors tend to steer the story more than actually trim.
Sometimes trimming is necessary. Sometimes beats go on for too long. Sometimes stories go on for far too long. This issue definitely is an example of that. What do you got next?
Well, there's not just number ones, but there are like first issues of storylines this week. Batman number 48.
Yes.
Is the first in a new storyline, The Best Man.
Two issues before the 50th drops.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, I read Batman Prelude to the Wedding number 1, Nightwing and Hush, which actually broaches the subject of The Best Man. I feel like we got an answer, but we didn't. And then Tom King said on Twitter today that we don't have an answer until issue 50 comes out.
Okay.
And I'm just like, but we kind of did in this issue. And then we have The Best Man two-parter with the Joker. What did you think of this issue?
The Batman issue, like,
it's not good.
It's not bad.
The art's beautiful.
It's Michael Janine on art.
And it's all in a church, so it's like the environments are...
Most of the dialogue is the Joker. I feel like Tom King definitely brings in a lot of Heath Ledger Joker when he's doing all of that.
Especially when he's monologuing. Anytime I read a Tom King book now, I've been conditioned to figure out what his thing is that issue. What's the thing Tom King's trying to do this issue? And that thing is to have Joker dominate the dialogue of an entire issue. By the time I'm halfway through the issue, I was like, oh my God, the Joker is still talking. And if there's the writer that exists right now that works for DC that hasn't quite gotten his hooks into the Joker, it's definitely Tom King. Because there's a lot of dialogue in here that is very try-hardy, very show-offy, and some of it's just, there's a whole page that's just a prayer. So it's like he's just like copying off a computer and then writing a scene around entire prayer.
It opens with Psalm 140, a character just saying that. But I thought that was done fairly well, punctuated by screams and bangs.
Yeah, well then that brings us to some of the more horrific parts of the issue. And there are some character beats. I don't think Tom King, either he doesn't read other comics or he just refuses to initiate what a character would actually do in a given scenario in order to make his own narrative work. In that case, that definitely happens in this issue. It happened with the booster gold that we just sat through, the gift, which were bad, both in terms of execution and character moments. This one has a character moment with the Batman and the Joker where I'm like, neither of these two would do this. This is completely ridiculous.
I thought some of it made sense, but a little bit of it early on I saw as being a little out of character.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I didn't hate it.
Sure.
It was probably a little more violent than I often like in comics,
mm-hmm.
but if it's a comic that's centered around the Joker, that's probably going to happen.
You're going to get violence.
People like to go over the top when they write the Joker. but yeah, so it was okay. I'm still looking forward to the wedding itself, and Michael Janin's art is always the best.
The wedding's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, and I just point out one thing. What? There was one panel in Batman 48 that pretty much focuses on Batman from like his waist to his calves.
It's my least favorite page.
But that panel, Michael Janin draws the male form real well.
That's not news.
Real well. But it was just funny. You just see this panel and it's just like crotch and thigh.
Thighs.
And it's like, dang, Michael Janin. Dang.
Batman doesn't skip
leg day.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, since we're talking about the Joker, what do you think about that new Jared Leto standalone Joker movie?
Oh, God.
Yeah. This is the third Joker movie, like solo Joker movie, I think they've been talking about over at Warner Brothers.
It's unnecessary, and I hope it falls through. Like, like DC's movies, all they need to have is Wonder Woman 2. The rest, they can figure out something better to do and just not do any right now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They also did a Wonder Woman kind of sort of non-announcement where it's going to take place in 1984.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make a new wave playlist of all stuff that comes out before 1984 that I want to hear on the soundtrack.
I think that would make a damn good playlist.
Yeah.
Why don't you do a Spotify on that?
I started it, but I haven't had time to really dig in. I'm off tomorrow, so I might have time to do it then.
I don't know if we're gonna see Wonder Woman at like some sort of discotheque with like a big perm or anything, but
what I want to see is Kristen Wiig wearing a blazer with some enormous fucking shoulder pads.
I feel like you could just watch old episodes of Saturday Night Live and get that.
Hopefully like cheetah patterned, and then maybe have her hair huge and permed and like really high up. That would thrill me a lot.
Do you think the perm would transfer over when she became the cheetah?
I don't know. Probably not. But it depends what they're doing like with the design on that character.
Well, think about it too, because like George Perez is such an influential artist on Wonder Woman. He drew Diana with really curly hair because, you know, she's Greek.
Yeah.
So do you think like they'll give Gal Gadot a perm for this movie?
Probably not. I would love it. I love huge hair in general. Like, I don't know if anybody has ever seen my hair.
You have a lot of hair.
I like to get my hair real big.
A lot of hair.
I would be excited. I was actually just now just thinking, like, as far as like the design on what Cheetah's gonna look like, I hope it's not all CGI, but oh god, I bet it's gonna be.
It's probably gonna be. They're not gonna put prosthetics on Kristen Wiig.
That's a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, that just kind of brought me down a little bit.
Oh, no. Drink more coffee. Sup from the glam breakfast.
But anyway, 1984, Wonder Woman.
Pretty cool.
That had me excited all day after that announcement.
I like it, too, conceptually, because it will give us a reason why Wonder Woman didn't pop up since World War I.
Yes.
It's like, oh, Doomsday is why you came back? That's silly. I don't care. That movie sucks. Since we're talking about glam, let's just talk about Dazzler.
Yeah.
X song number one. Let's talk about this Bill Sienkiewicz cover real quick.
Yes, there's a Bill Sienkiewicz variant that is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
He actually posted a couple little like layouts that he had submitted that he had made so many because he was like excited about doing it, couldn't like decide on like one pose or whatever, and they all looked so good.
Yeah. If there's a definitive Dazzler artist, I would say it's Bill Sienkiewicz. I mean, they even squoze in his album into X-Men Apocalypse. Remember that bit?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a deleted scene, but if you watch the DVD, it's Blu-ray, it's in there. DVD, I'm showing my age. Dazzler, X song number one. What'd you think?
I liked it okay.
It's a standalone, one and done.
Yes.
It's Mags Visaggio.
Yeah, it's her Marvel debut.
It is, with art by Laura Braga, Rochelle Rosenberg on colors, and then we got Joe Sabino, the old workhorse, doing letters.
So it's exciting that other than Joe Sabino, it's all ladies.
All femme team.
Pretty exciting.
Mags is definitely digging into the mutant-inhuman divide that I don't really feel was a thing.
It's there, but like that was the one thing that I didn't super enjoy about the issue because I don't care about like mutants versus Inhumans because I think it was a really silly addition to the universe in general. Because when they were trying to make the Inhumans like the mutants, when they didn't want to use mutants because they didn't have the movie rights.
Yeah. So now they're having like turf wars. It's like we are genetically superior. It's like you got Magneto's acolytes or wannabe acolytes running around. And the mutants all have monster faces for the most part, some deformity. And all the Inhumans look like they walked out of The Wicked and the Divine. And I don't know. I'm not over the moon for this issue. I do understand what Mags was going for, but also parlaying into the mutant is a stand-in or an analogy for, you know, gay rights. In this circumstance, it's gay rights versus trans rights, what rifts exist in those worlds. So that's definitely a part of its message, which I appreciated. But as far as execution goes, this could have been a miniseries. This could have been like 3 issues at least. There's a lot of ground it tries to cover.
It's definitely squished in there.
Very compressed. And I didn't care for Colossus's voice in this issue.
Yeah.
He's a little
Colossus
too...
Colossus just kind of shows up.
He just shows up, but he doesn't sound Russian. He doesn't sound like he is from another place. You understand.
He does say Niet.
But then he just sounds like, hey, you do you. You know, it's like he wouldn't say that, but it's fine. Dazzler X song, I would recommend. It's going to be in my top 5 picks. Check it out.
It was fun.
I liked it.
What about DC number one again?
Yes.
The Unexpected.
Here's a book I loved.
I liked it a lot.
It was a lot of fun. And that's all I want anymore. I just want to have fun when I'm reading superhero comics. I'm so tired of auteur writers making these books seem so dire all the time. Like, this is the biggest event you'll ever read. This is the biggest thing. I can't believe they actually let us do this. And it's like, cut the shit and tell a story. The Unexpected was a lot of fun.
I didn't necessarily love the fact that it ties in really heavily with Metal.
Well, it's a new age of DC heroes.
Yeah, but I felt like Terrifics kind of took the concept like, okay, are these powers and all this shit is based in the events of Metal.
Sure.
And then it just goes on from there. Yeah. This seems to pull a lot more from that.
I feel like it has to, because like it deals with the multiversal you know shenanigans that have taken place now that the rifts have occurred. There's a hole in the source wall, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, it just made me kind of like, it made me a little less excited reading it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like the main character,
her name is Janet Fowles, but we call her
Starbrand, right?
Firebrand. Firebrand is an awesome character. She's got like
the conflict engine is what her heart.
Her
is.
Heart is called a conflict engine, and she has to get into a fight every 24 hours to stay alive.
Yeah.
That's just like a really cool concept for a character.
Very cool.
As a person, she's kind of scrappy, so like, you know, it's a good concept.
Yeah.
It works. Of course, she is approached by this otherworldly being.
A character named Bad Samaritan.
Bad Samaritan, who looks like he fell right out of Morrison's Doom Patrol run. He's like got this like really crappy Vegas cowboy thing going on.
Or like a WWE wrestler.
Yeah, sure.
He could be a wrestler.
Yeah, he definitely
a really skinny one.
Like, yeah. He's an awesome villain. He sucks. He's mean. He knows how to get in edgewise on our newfound hero, and it creates this really awesome dichotomy. What'd you think of the alternating art between Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord?
I was fine with the art.
Mm-hmm.
The art looked different from Ryan Sook's usual stuff.
Yeah.
Which is not to say it's bad. Mm-hmm. I didn't look at it and be like, Ryan Sook. It was just like, wait, is that him? But I was fine with the art. I thought the transition between the two was seamless enough. I didn't think it was too jarring to go between the two, which in some other recent issues, when you have two different artists, sometimes it can be like, yow.
Yeah, this book, there's a book that we're going to talk about very shortly that does this in a very distracting way. But in the meantime, I would highly recommend Unexpected number one.
I liked it a lot too.
I think it's probably one of the stronger things Steve Orlando's put out. He was really pumped about this book. I could see why. I mean, the ideas in this book alone, I like the characters. I like the concept. I can't wait to see more of it. Read this book. It's also in my top 5. I feel like we should just rattle off what our top 5 is as we go on, because we're pretty much doing it now anyway.
Yeah, I don't think I've done any. None of my top 5 has been mentioned yet.
I got 2 out of the gate. What do we got next?
Well, we can hop back over to Marvel.
Okay.
I don't know if you read this one, though, but Deadpool number one?
I'm not reading Deadpool.
Okay, well, I read it. I actually liked it.
Cool.
I don't know if I'm going to, like, keep on reading it because I read too many comics. And there are comics that I like that I don't that I don't read just because I have to like love it to really keep
up. You're not going to carve out time in your life to read a Deadpool comic.
But I really enjoy this. I don't typically read Deadpool. I mean, I don't feel the need. The reason I picked this one up is because it's written by Scotty Young, most recently of I Hate Fairyland, which he writes and draws. And he's, you know, very well known as an artist as well for the Oz series and other stuff.
But he draws little babies.
But little babies who say lots of bad words.
Yeah.
which is why he works on Deadpool. Because, like, I Hate Fairyland, that whole concept works. It's very compatible with a Deadpool aesthetic. And the art in here is by Nick Klein. Nick Klein is super good.
Yeah.
There's, like, a short story at the end by Scott Hepburn and Ian Herring.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's pretty funny. That one's very meta and referential to other comics.
Sure.
It was funny and it worked well as a first issue. You don't have to know stuff because apparently Deadpool recently erased his memory. So there's not a lot of past stuff to catch you up on where you have to know where everything stands. It's just like
it's convenient.
Here's Deadpool. He's a mercenary.
Yeah, it's convenient and it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and I think the only other like character in it pretty much is Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Which they make a funny joke about. The reason that maybe she's in there is because they just got paired up randomly in a movie. Giggled more than I thought I would at this. But then again, Scotty Young, he writes funny shit, so it makes sense. I recommend it.
You recommend it?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's a $4.99 book, but...
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Most of the Marvel stuff is really expensive.
Most of the Marvel books are $4.99.
Why do they feel they have to do this? Because they're going to sell more of them? They're not.
Because they can.
That doesn't mean they should.
No.
Let's pretend you're a brand new reader, and you're fresh-faced, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed. You walk into a comic book store. You've heard so many great things about comic books, and you can't wait to get started. And you walk up to a wall of books, and there's so many of them, but there's all these new number ones, and you're like, oh, number one means this is the first issue. I could read it. And you pick it up, and you see another one. You get excited. You're like, oh, my God, how could I be so lucky? And you grab a whole stack. You're so excited, you don't bother to look at the price. You take it up to the front, and they ring it up, and they give you the price, and all the issues were $4.99. All of them were $5. You lose heart, and you walk out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's Marvel does it for the same reason that they hiked all their books to $3.99 sooner than everybody else did, and, you know, they've had their, like, number one issues at $5 for a little while now. Yeah. It's just, like, it's because people are still going to buy them. When people stop buying them at $4.99, they'll stop putting them out at $4.99.
Well, here's a funny thing. Here's a funny contrast. The Unexpected book we just talked about has say what you want about these triple vertical gatefold covers. This was a $2.99 debut.
Yeah.
And the cover stock is so much better. And it's not even good. It's what should be standard. Yeah. $2.99 for a comic. You go over to Deadpool. The cover's made out of what? Toilet paper?
The cover is, you know, just interior stock, and it's already kind of curling a little bit because it's shitty paper.
Yeah, and the ink smears, and paying $5 for it.
The only one that has good cover stock is Doctor Strange.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's so weird.
But anyway, Deadpool number one is fun despite its $5 price tag.
Is it in your top five this week?
No, it is not.
Okay, cool. Moving on.
Okay.
I'm going to do one real quick from Vault. Vault's got two books coming out that I would totally recommend. One of them is Wasted Space number 2. Vagrant Queen, brand new debut.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Another Max Visaggio book.
Another Max Visaggio book. This is also in my top five. Art by Jason Smith. Colors by Natasha Alterisi. I don't know who did the letters because I don't have the book in front of me right now. This seems like a whole lot of fun.
As far as my top five, I have a book in here called Spectacle, which is put out by Oni Press.
Mm-hmm.
It's a graphic novel. And it's by Megan Rose Gedris.
Yes, this was a webcomic.
I don't think this was the webcomic. I think she's done a webcomic that was separate from this.
Oh, okay.
But I think she's local. And this is only because I see her at Cake every year under the name Rosalarian.
Hold on a second.
Yes.
You got that book?
Yeah.
Let me see that. Let me look at the back cover here. Hey, they put a Doom Rocket Pull quote on it.
They did?
Yeah. How did you not see that?
I didn't. I wasn't even looking.
Stefania, I believe, did this for Books for Babes. A murder mystery that's as intriguing as it is enchanting. That is a Stefania line.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't even realize it.
We'll have to tell her later on today.
And they spelled it right. But anyway, she also goes by Rosalarian. And I have a couple of her enamel pins.
Oh, yeah?
But she's done some cool enamel pins and just other various things. This story is about twin sisters who work in a circus.
But one's a ghost.
One of them is murdered.
Yeah.
And inhabits her sister's body. so they can find out who the killer is.
Mm.
Her art is beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to read this. She did all like the colors, letters, etc. But the design is by Hillary Thompson and it's edited by Ari Yarwood. But yeah, Spectacle Book 1 is in my top 5 this week.
That's cool. Let's talk about a DC book real quick. Get this one out of the way. Man of Steel number 2.
Yes.
Second part of a 6-part miniseries.
Oh shit, I meant to put that on my top 5.
Did you?
Yeah, that's... Because it's Doc Shaner art.
Yeah, some of it.
The rest of it is Steve Rude and Jason Fabick. And Jason Fabick's stuff in these two issues have been okay.
And they serve a purpose, I'm glad to say. But it just seems to be telling the same moment fixed in Superman's memory, but unveiling itself slowly over the course of 6 issues. Because I've read the solicit material of Superman in Action Comics, and John and Lois are nowhere to be found. And they actually mentioned that whatever happened to them, Superman's still reeling from it. So why John and Lois Lane are not a part of the Superman story that Brian Michael Bendis wants to tell, I have no idea. But I don't like it.
I think they're going to show up eventually. I think it's going to be something where they got, like, taken away or something.
Meh.
But he has mentioned on Twitter how much he enjoys writing both of those characters.
Well, we've yet to see it.
Well, he writes ahead, so I'm sure he is including them. And also, he started off the recent Jessica Jones reboot making it seem like her and Luke were, like, done.
Dunzo?
And they weren't. Like, she was deep undercover. Like, she had to go to prison and all this stuff. And she was not split up from Luke. And they reconciled at the end of the storyline. So it was,
I'm waiting. But I don't like it so far.
Okay.
Men of Steel is dragging its feet. We're 2 issues in. Czar character, this villain... He has yet to fight Superman. He's just kind of spinning his wheels. I'm getting the feeling he's a Zarnian. I really do.
Well, they're trying to develop his character before they actually have their, you know, punch.
It's a Lobo character. That's what he is. He's pretty much angrier Lobo. This isn't a spoiler. There's a scene where Czar is drinking in a, you know, far-off Mos Eisley type space bar. When we see him, he's got like this like space motorcycle kind of thing. So he's definitely a Zarnian. And I guess that's just what Zarnians were. It's just a planet of bikers.
Well, anyway, I liked Doc Shaner's art in this issue, although I didn't love the colors.
Yeah, the colors seemed off.
And I'm sure the reason they did this, they wanted Alex Sinclair to probably do the colors on this to kind of make it the transitions from artist to artist not be so jarring like in the graphic novel or just for like, you know, people reading it in issue form.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's why they did it. Having just read Shaner's issue of The Terrifics with colors by Nathan Fairbairn, this was really weird to look at because Nathan Fairbairn's colors just look so much better with Shaner's art.
And this isn't to denigrate Alex Sinclair at all. He's a fine colorist as well. It's just, I think it's odd that DC would want that level of consistency, but the rest of this miniseries is just like musical artists. It's like whoever we could get to fill in the deadline gaps, because Steve Rude fills in for Doc Shaner in this issue, and I love Steve Rude's art. They looked so far removed from each other, it looks like I ran into a different issue of Superman.
I think it was the colors, you know?
Yeah, there's just no cohesion there, and like the inking is completely different and blocky, and I don't know. I think this is a mess.
Well, a couple of the panels, because of Shaner's amazing art, a couple of the panels just like made me spontaneously smile because they were so good.
Just Erd Grennan.
Yeah, Doc Shaner can draw the shit out of Superman anytime he likes.
I'm sure he agrees with you.
I wish this whole series was Doc Shaner art. Which, you know, I'm still looking forward to seeing Kevin Maguire art and Adam Hughes art. Yeah. Heck. But man, I love me some Doc Shaner.
Yeah. I just wish we had seen more of him in this issue.
Yeah. And that he'd been colored by Fairbairn.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike the issue all in all. I don't dislike all the stuff. I've been enjoying it so far.
Cool.
All right, what's another book from your top 5?
Nightwing number 45.
Okay.
This isn't necessarily a huge issue, but it's definitely one that I would encourage you to read. Issue number 45 is the second part of The Bleeding Edge. This is part of the new Ben Percy run with Chris Mooneyham art, and Klaus Janson does the inks for the first 15 pages. And Klaus Janson rules, especially as an inker. I think he improves anybody's art, especially in a Gotham book. He just adds that level of grit that gives it an authenticity. And Nightwing is definitely a book that benefits from that kind of edge. The bleeding edge, if you will.
Oh, another book from my top 5, which might be in your top 5 too, I'm not sure.
Maybe.
It's another one of these fancy number ones.
Mm-hmm.
Immortal Hulk number 1.
It is. And that actually closes out my top 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I should have been concentrating on my top 5 more. I loved this book a lot. Jared did too.
I did. I really enjoyed it.
It's written by Allie Ewing, art by Joe Bennett, inks by Rui Jose, colors by our friend Paul Mounts, and letters by VC's Corey Pettit. Immortal Hulk is going to be kind of taking more of a horror angle on the character, and it definitely does.
It totally does. And yeah. Not only that, it's a one and done. I mean, yeah. It has an arc in mind, but it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And that's what I really appreciate. That's how you hook somebody. You tell a complete story, people come back for the next issue. I'm coming back for the Immortal Hulk number 2.
It's probably the best first issue of all of the ones that came out this week. It definitely gripped me the most. Mm-hmm. It definitely has me the most excited for the rest of the series.
It's creepy.
Yeah, it's hella creepy.
The way Joe Bennett draws the Hulk in this, and you don't see a whole lot of him until the very end, without giving too much away, but there's a way that he depicts the character that I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
he does these crazy close-ups on his face.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, just chilling.
It seems like death has given Banner a rather grim sense of humor.
I recommend it a lot.
I do too.
Yeah.
I think it's a really solid debut.
Mm-hmm. And to move on to a book that is not in my top 5, but I considered putting it in there, but there's too many books to, yeah. Justice League number 1.
Mm.
I didn't love it, but I liked it okay. It's the most I've liked a Snyder book in a long time. Jim Chung's art is lovely.
It is. The colors are magnificent.
It definitely feels a bit like the Justice League cartoon. Mm-hmm. It felt more like the Super Friends cartoon to me than anything else. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. A couple of things I loved about it. The new logo. The bright, optimistic cover. The Jim Chung art.
Its focus on Martian Manhunter is pretty great.
Martian Manhunter is one of my favorite DC characters. He's the chairman of the Justice League. I think that's great. That's all good stuff. It does set up a really awesome story, but it's one of those gigantic, you're not going to believe this kind of thing that DC let us do, that they did with No Justice. And No Justice was a non-starter as far as I'm concerned.
We were not fans of No Justice in this house.
Right out of the gate, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm getting old and cranky, but when the first series of pages is everyone addressing each other by name. It's like when you meet somebody new at work and you're like, what is his name? You hear it once and you keep saying it just to make sure it gets embedded in your brain. This is how people talk to each other throughout the first 6 pages of this book. It drives me insane.
For a first issue, I can forgive it.
Scott Snyder's a better writer than that. He definitely is a better writer than that. The first page is like all these people. If this was somebody's first DC book or first Justice League book, they're not going to know who these characters are with or without their names. They don't need to all address each other. Ten people address each other by name in the first page.
I would argue that that first page is where it's needed more than elsewhere, because those are characters who aren't going to show up in this book. And it's, you know, if it is someone's first DC
that makes
comic,
it even more superfluous.
They would need the reference.
No.
Yeah.
What do you think about its central premise? What do you think of where it's going as a book?
I mean, it's fine. Like, I it doesn't, like, crazy thrill me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we should probably mention the credits on this book. Written by Scott Snyder, of course. Art by Jim Chung. With inks by Mark Morales. Colors by Tamu Morey. And letters by Tom Napolitano. Like I said, it's fine. It didn't thrill me. It doesn't really matter to me where it goes. It's fun.
Are you going to keep reading it?
Probably. It's Justice League.
I don't think I'm going to keep reading it. Like, we have stacks of comics all over the house and even more coming in every week.
I mean, I didn't dislike it the way I disliked No Justice. It isn't that overwritten.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be Jorge Jimenez and Jim Chung, like, swapping issues. So I'm fine with still reading it.
I don't know. No Justice bugged me in a way that I was like, I'm not stoked for Justice League number 1. And then I read it and I was like, it's just more of this. I think that there are too many writers that are very influenced by Grant Morrison that try to imbue their own stories with a lot of what they liked from the Grant Morrison stuff and try to make it their own. The problem is that a lot of the time, it's the ambition first, execution second, I feel like, with these stories. The execution, I mean, and they're on the clock, they got to kick out these books as quickly as they can. It's really hard to quantify interest when, like, you've been reading these characters for years and you've got Barry Allen who reads like Wally West.
Yeah, Barry Allen in here definitely reads like the Flash from the cartoon.
Yes, he does.
100%.
Not, he does not sound like Barry Allen to me. John Stewart, I don't even think has a line in this issue. He's just in there.
I think he did.
Did he?
I think he did at one point.
I don't know.
But I'm sure he's going to be in it more since he's on the cover.
I think there's a lot of characters in here. I think there may be too many characters in here. The new Kendra Saunders character from Metal is the new official hot girl. We don't really see much with her. Everyone just kind of sits around. That's one of my big beasts with this issue, without giving too much away, is that there's this purportedly huge thing that's about to happen to Earth. Jean puts everyone in the same mental space to have a chat about it, but he's counting down as it's happening. It's like, it's happening in 3 minutes, it's happening in 2 minutes, it's happening in a minute.
And they're just, they're chatting.
And they're like, yeah, let's talk about it a little more. Maybe talking about it will solve the problem. And it's like, I don't know. Too little happens and too much at the same time. A lot of chatter and not a whole lot of action. So as far as Justice League number one is concerned, I think it's a... Art aside, I think it's a non-starter.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, this episode's a mess. You got any top five left for us?
Yes, I do.
Please give them to us.
I've got Prism Stalker number 4 by the amazing Sloan Long. Cannot wait to read this next issue. This has been one of my favorite new series debuts in a long time. I love how crazy psychedelic she makes her colors.
Yeah.
I love the weirdness of the sci-fi. Prism Stalker, if you haven't picked it up yet, go pick it up.
It's really heady sci-fi.
It's fun. It's great. And my last remaining addition to the top five is Paper Girls number 21, a brand new storyline. This is the first issue of what's going to be volume 5.
Volume 5.
They are in the far future now, and they're still in Cleveland. They keep on kind of focusing on a specific character with each volume.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such an excellent book. More I read this book, the more I'm just convinced of how much I love it. And cool. How much everyone should be reading it.
I've got all the back issues stacked up over there. I'll get to it someday.
So Paper Girls number 21, new story arc. Go pick that shit up. Oh, duh. And written by Brian K. Vaughan. Art by Cliff Chang. Colors by Matt Wilson. Letters by Jared K. Fletcher. So what do you say? Should we head over to our question on social media?
Oh, God, please. Yes, absolutely. Every week we take the social media and ask you guys a question on our minds. This week's question. There's a ton of new number ones and other equally big books hitting the stores tomorrow. My God, so many. What new issue from this week are you looking forward to the most, and why? We asked, you answered. MJ, take it away.
Well, on Facebook, Aaron J. Amendola said, Dazzler, because she's the most overlooked character and her time has come.
Over on Twitter, Rooster, at Rooster Abuma, said, really looking forward to Immortal Hulk because it's dark and I want to see what Paper Girls is all about because I like sci-fi.
Annie Bullock on Facebook said, I enjoyed Dazzler a lot. Immortal Hulk was fine, I guess. Justice League lost my interest after a few pages, mm-hmm. and I haven't bothered with Man of Steel. It's not like that's one that needs a lot of hand-selling.
Back on Twitter, Clyde Hall at CJ Hall 1984, what's up, Clyde? Said, looking forward to Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrow's number 4 out from Dark Horse, but Dynamite's Red Sonja Tarzan number 2 wins out, mainly due to Gail Simone acing the pulp goodness of both characters so well.
Corinne McCreary on Facebook says, I loved Justice League. It was fun. It was fresh. It reminded me of both Morrison and the cartoon. It's honestly the best issue of a Justice League book I've read in at least a decade.
Over on Facebook, Paul Mounts said, Hulk, there is no other book.
Arpad Lep on Facebook said, Isola number 3, Carl Kerschel and M. Sasek's work is the most beautiful fantasy art coming out in comics today, period. The characters are great, the plot is mysterious and satisfying, but man oh man, is this book just flat out breathtakingly gorgeous. A feast for the eyes.
Back on Twitter, Alex Chung at Alex_Chung said, lots of good choices this week, but I'm excited for Man of Steel number 2 for that sweet, sweet Doc Shaner art.
Okay, and our last one, Katie Proctor on Facebook said, Vagrant Queen number 1 was super fun, cartoony and violent and aggressive and funny.
Alright, that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 58-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays over at DoomRocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon. And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
And that's it. So until the day, that glorious day, we get to catch up on our reading stacks, I remain Jared. That's MJ. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day.